Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
You saw the truth, didn't you? You're trapped in this simulation so your mother can keep you alive.
You're lying. That's not my memory. You plundered that in my brain.
When your mother was your age, she found a paper on Plato's cave allegory in my study. She was clearly too young to understand the abstract concept Plato was suggesting. Nevertheless, she read it over and over. It was this one thought that turned her world upside down. The idea that our knowledge has limits and that we can never know if things truly are how they appear. We are in a slumber, unaware of the true nature of things. One evening she came to me and said, "If it's true what Plato argues, then how do we know if anything is real? How do we know that the actual reality isn't outside the life we're living?" It was a mighty big thought for a girl her age. I looked at her and asked her, "Isn't that what God is? The creator of our reality?" She thought about it for a moment, and then she answered, "But then it's the world God is living in that's real. And we are just his doll's house. And then again, who created God? Doesn't it go on endlessly? In a way, this here is a doll's house. And it was built for you."
You're lying.
Heresy shouldn't be this much fun, and it is, and it just is, especially when you're surrounded by women who are starting all these heretical movements and bringing back the ancient gnosis of Kai Bell and the other forgotten goddesses. Yeah, for those of you watching on video, you just saw seven women, Gnostic women leaders and priestesses. And yes, what would the Gnostics be without women? Nowhere, as you see, it was extremely influential, the divine feminine. That's why the Gnostics just had to go, because we could not, we were turning into a civilized society where the powers of nature just had to be suppressed, and that included women, that included the ancient ways of Ashira and Anat and Sekhmet, that include Dreamtime and the Chaos and Tiamat and all that. So, as you know, one of the missions or quests of Eyyambyd is to restore the divine feminine and get a little bit balance back to our dying society. So my name is Miguel Connor, and I am your Pompidus of Gnosis. And with us, it's an individual who has championed the divine feminine in Gnosticism and other traditions for that balance. Highly check out her book, The Other Goddess. It's a great read. We've had her on the show to discuss her. And I do cite her for my book, The Occult Elvis, as Elvis certainly was practicing Tantra and other things, as you will find out when it comes in April. And that is Dr. Joanna Cuyava. Joanna, great to have you back.
Thank you for having me back here, Miguel and Vance. And, you know, what a wonderful intro. The visuals, you know, I've seen it before, but they're just gorgeous. And I like how you imagine them, because they're obviously women of wisdom, but they are also very feminine. You know, they are sexy babes at the same time. And and they have a little bit of attitude. So they do not conform to, you know, what actually Carl Jung was talking about persona, right? So they were definitely went through the, you know, process of individuation and so on. So I really, really love it, because in my daily life, you know, I have to, and I enjoy it, teach some courses on women in leadership and so on. And there is this at the moment, you know, way of portraying women in a particular way. And I said, okay, what was not good, right? We can agree in mainstream history. But what is now, it's kind of perverted too. So I'm trying to exactly portray the same vision of the feminine that you did in this at this beginning, because I don't want two things to happen. One thing is that it's like women versus men, because I think it's idiotic. You know, we are one and we really need each other, and, you know, and it's very exciting that we need each other. And another thing is that the recent portrayal of women with modernity as really guys in skirts, except that, you know, we don't. Yeah. So I don't want that either. You know, that because something is lost. Something is lost. And some people say, okay, what's actually lost? You know, something is lost because at the beginning, you know, woman was considered this prima mater, right? So just very passive. And I can understand, you know, myself, a woman, but I didn't like it. I didn't want to be this kind of passive, you know, passive thing, which I definitely am not. But at the same time, there were examples of women that you had that were not like that, that they champion wisdom, you know, that was rejected. And no, they're not in majority, you know, and so on. But we actually, I want us to look at this wisdom eventually in my next book and so on, you know, and also in The Other Goddess, you know, this other wisdom, and what's left of us, where we can find it. And some people say, oh, maybe it was not there at all. And I said, even if it was not there, which is not true, we have to then find it. You know what I mean? Because we desperately need a different form of consciousness, a different form of intelligence, that the one that is leading us to, well, where we are now. And that's not exactly a very good place. So sorry for this. I went for a rant. I didn't understand.
Beautiful. No, it's beautifully said. Couldn't agree more. Yeah. Thanks for sharing, because it's important. Women should not act like men. It's really about, again, anima, animas, the Adam, yeah, and the primal man. It is,
yes,
a lot more subtle and nuanced than that. And it is extremely important today. And again, it's remarkable to think. I mean, even today, it's hard. Obviously, it's very hard for a woman to be in a leadership position because our society is still... Well, it's still our society. We got work to do. But think 2,000 years ago, for Marcellina to open a church in Rome, for Maryam to start an entire religion in Jerusalem, for Mary Magdalene to be seen, you know, as the bride of the Logos and have a whole community understanding and following her teachings, and Salome over and over, what the Gnostics did is nothing sort of remarkable. And even today is almost unheard of, right? Even today would be hard to do.
That's right. And I think that consciously or not, these women were championing this different form of consciousness, you know, the different part of the brain, because we are so lost, I think, right now in the mathematical, logical part of our brain. And we are going in a, you know, really perplexing direction, I would say. Some people, and I agree with this, call it like post-human history, actually, you know, because we are moving in this direction when we are losing somewhere in the process of losing our humanity. So I think they were trying to represent this different form of wisdom, you know. So not all women in the past, because we were accomplished women who were basically a part of the mainstream in a way, although, you know, we cannot diminish by accomplishments such as like Hypatia, right? But she was actually, what John E. Taylor says and what I repeated in The Other Goddess, one of the guys. You know, so it was an amazing accomplishment that she was who she was, and she was a Platonist, you know, so it's like top philosopher. It's a little bit like nowadays top quantum physicist, right? Because this is this right. kind of paradigm. Through approximation, but you know, she was one of the guys, so to speak, right? When there are these other women that they actually try to move a stream of consciousness in a different direction, and I think that this is what Gnostic women did. This is what, at least in my interpretation, Mary Magdalene did, and all the women that you mentioned, and you probably know even more about them, you know, and so on, because I remember your lecture, you know. So, so all of this is going on. And that's why I think it's still important, you know, and that's why I'm kind of almost addicted to the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, You know, because it is such a difficult piece of work. It's not something like you sit and read and you say, oh, I'm feeling so inspired. You know, lines are just speaking to me. It's just, what are you trying to tell me? Right. And in fact, I would not be able to work with this have I not been already initiated to esoteric Hinduism and Tantra and Kashmir Shaivism, which, you know, I have learned to, like, in decoding what's, you know, they don't want you to decode, or they assume that you know what they are talking about. Because very often this kind of text, which is also called often a twilight language, was for those who were either were already initiated, so they knew, right? Or if you're not initiated and you want the text to initiate you, and I highly recommend it, but stick, you know, one text, you know, at least until you get it, and then you can move on to another text. So I've been, like, for 20 years with Gospel of Mary Magdalene, and I'm still working on it. So the text initiates you. So you have to have a certain form of communication with the text. And the more you read it, the more you get it. If you're not initiated, because some people say, oh, how do I initiate it nowadays? And, you know, I don't trust gurus, and, you know, fair enough, you know. But, you know, the text can initiate you, but you have to read it with love and devotion, so to speak, you know, and you have to communicate with the text. I think that every text has particular energy, and so does the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. So before, you know, we even move to anything else, I would really like to thank, for example, Jean-Yves Leloup, the translator, one of the many translators, right? Because there are many translators. But what I like about Jean-Yves Leloup, I like his interpretation, because for me, although I disagree on some points now, you know, but I wouldn't be able to disagree with him if I didn't learn something from him, right? So this is what a good disciple does. So it is because he, for me, what he did for the Gospel of Mary Magdalene is what Coleman Barks did for Rumi. So Coleman Barks is I'm not sure if he's still alive or whether, you know, he died recently. I'm not sure. I don't want to bury him if he's, but he's a poet, and his friend, whom I had opportunity to meet at some other talk, said, you know, you have to retranslate, you have to give Rumi's poems wings, because, you know, they were translated via, what is it, Shambhala, you know, very good publishing house, and, you know, and it was just so constipated, you know, like, yes, it was well translated grammatically, but it didn't have a soul, you know. And Coleman Barks translated, so all the translations that, you know, you see on Facebook are by Coleman Barks, okay? So when the people really, you know, about a friend, that people really, it touches their hearts. And people said, oh, because, you know, irony of this, but he actually doesn't speak Farsi, right? So he, but he was taking the translations and he was looking from he's a Sufi, from a spiritual point of view, and translated it. And even the, you know, Iranian government gave him an award, because there's finally something in the West, you know, somebody in the West translated Rumi in a way that it was actually sounds like it is in Farsi, you know, that the spiritual message was that. So this is what, you know, I think, like, Jean-Yves Leloup did for the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. But I kind of moved beyond it now, you know, and I kind of connected with also its Egyptian roots, and also with, you know, Neoplatonic roots, but then, you know, of course, Neoplatonic roots, because then everybody was a Platonist, right? Like in those days. And also recently I was looking at Jung's process of individuation, and I realized it's not exactly the same, but he follows, you know, similar steps to what the Gospel of Mary Magdalene is talking about. So again, I believe that Carl Jung was extremely intuitive, you know, so I thought, like, maybe we could connect, you know, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, not only with Egypt, but also with Jung. And I recently gave a talk at the Carl Jung Society to the, you know, Jungian analysts, and you know, and they were happy with this. So I thought, okay, so maybe I'm not completely off the track with this, you know, comparing, you know, and they were really interested in this. And, you know, we know, so maybe just, where would you like me to go with this? Where would you like me to start?
Let's see, first, Coleman Barks is ready. And Vance, yes, let me say, Vance, are you ready to animate your anima?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, with us, we've got the Moondog. Hey, Vance.
Yeah, hi. Yeah. Yeah, it's I've just recently discovered that before 1974, women couldn't open bank accounts by themselves. They'd have to have a male co-signer.
I mean, give me a break, you know?
Yeah, so, I was shocked.
Yeah. So, but nowadays, like even we are watching some shows with my husband, and it's just they're pushing this particular form of the feminine, you know, very aggressive, very masculine. Yeah. I think they're overcompensating, you know what I mean? So, and that's why in The Other Goddess, I wanted to say there are so many archetypes, you know, you don't have to be, it doesn't have to be from like prima mater, you know, you're just waiting there for the male to impregnate you, right? And then you don't have to go into some wild chick necessarily, you know, that is beating up everybody because you're angry all the time. You know, there are things in between, you know, which are of great value for women to identify with.
Exactly. No, very well said indeed. Well, to start, why don't we talk about, well, first for the audience, good to see everybody there in the chat room. God knows Graham. Everybody else, if you have a question for Joanna as the interview goes, please super chat them or complain against Vance and I super chat them so we can separate them. Not much house cleaning right now. I've got a little promo in the middle. So, yeah, why don't we talk the Gospel of Mary? Maybe give the audience a little background on what is the Gospel of Mary and what's the history and then.
Yes. Yeah. So it was discovered in the 19th century, in 1996, in Akmin, so in the area of Akmin. And it is, I think, very interesting because very often, you know, everybody focuses, even Jean-Yves Leloup, on the fact, and it's in Egypt.
Yeah. No, of course.
So that, you know, everybody goes to Christianity immediately, or, you know, Platonists or Neoplatonists, which was a major intellectual influence at the time. But I think, like, hello, you know, the thing was found in Egypt. There must be some influences that are Egyptian. And only the part of Coptic part was found in Akmin. The second one is in Orinkus, I think. Oxynkrus, I think. Right. It's difficult to pronounce, which is on the other side of the Nile and closer to Alexandria. You know, so, and then this part was in Greek and they put it together. And of course, still some pages are missing. So I would personally divide the Gospel of Mary Magdalene into parts one and part two. Part one is basically Jesus addressing questions of the disciples. And part two, Mary Magdalene addresses the question of the disciples. So somewhere in between, I guess, you know, the crucifixion must have happened, and that's why there is a switch, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking, when I was thinking about this Egyptian connection, I was looking into some other writings, you know, about Egyptian esoterica, which is not so easy to actually find, you know, because Egypt is a big mystery, and, you know, and also, you know, everybody knows that the pyramids are probably much older than they are, you know, the work of Graham Hancock and so on, but I never go into this. I go into the fact that there was esoteric tradition forever in Egypt, in which, you know, which talks about Osiris, and it talks about Isis, goddess Isis, right? And it talks about Horus. And apparently, and I got it from actually from Paul Branton and his fantastic book, Search in Secret Egypt. He also wrote another famous book, Search in Ancient India. I'm sorry, Search in Secret India. And the reason why I connected with Paul Branton and his work is because his beginnings were the same as mine, you know? So I could check his spiritual experiences from Hinduism, which he was a Westerner like us, you know, and he went. And I could, because I had the same experiences, I could say, okay, this guy is authentic, you know, he's legit. Right. So when he said some really mind-blowing things about Egypt and he had experiences there, I thought, okay, I already trust him, right? So he gives this, and through his studies, you know, so it's not that just he come up with this interpretation of the myth of Isis and Osiris, that Osiris represents humanity before awakening. Isis is the hierophant or the teacher who is taking humanity into an enlightenment, you know, or also through the rituals, you know, to experience near-death experience and see other worlds, you know, takes through the rituals, take us through rituals to the liminal space, you know, where things actually happen. And then Horus is the awakened humanity. So this is the esoteric meaning of the whole myth of Isis and Osiris and Horus.
What about Seth?
Seth. Yeah, Seth is probably the shadow to Osiris,
of course,
right?
Of course.
But
yeah,
it's a good point. But I was actually, thank you for this, I didn't look into it, because I was focusing recently on the Isis's shadow, which is Nephthys. Which her naughty sister, you know. So in, but maybe we'll go back to it when we discuss Jung. So they all have a shadow. So it's quite interesting also from Jungian perspective. So this is basically the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. And for me, the most important part, and with which I'm working currently, and I'm now, you know, so obsessed that I'm applying it to everything, you know. So it's the second part of the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, which basically talks about four levels of ascension.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what I like to focus on. So first of all, in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, you have these four levels. So the first level is actually not discussed because there are some pieces, you know, missing. But if you overimpose other systems, esoteric systems, you know that the number one was there, because the second part of the Gospel of Mary Magdalene moves to level two, which is the same level, right? So the first level, the missing level, is wrong identification, right? So wrong identification, which is across all, as far as I know, esoteric traditions. And actually, this is where, you know, the teaching says, just let me check here. I don't want to miss. Attachment to the matter is against your true nature.
Mm-hmm.
And another one, it is within you. It is not outside you. Be vigilant. So why is it significant? Because it talks about the attachment to the matter, which means wrong identification. And I think this is really, we nowadays, especially modern scientific paradigm, you know, is completely attached to there is only material. If something is even liminal, you know, or spiritual, and as an intellectual, you really cannot be spiritual because you're completely discredited, right? So there is only the material and only the physical, which is extremely limiting. And I remember you had Tobias Churton here a while ago on talking about his book on alchemy. And he says that the modern scientist looks at the universe and he sees this as a giant cow. And I really loved it, you know, full of methane, you know, full of methane. And we know what methane does, you know, I just don't want to be vulgar, right? So they don't see the music of the spheres. They don't use the potentiality for intelligent life, you know. They just see like a bunch of gases, you know. And even if the colors are beautiful, it is because something mixed with something else, right? So this is where we are, and I think this is false identification. And I think if we extrapolate it a little bit further to what's going on nowadays, but I'm not going to go into it late, you know, in this talk, it is, for example, our obsession with artificial intelligence as well, you know, and pharmaceuticals and so on, because if there is all that there is, and when I listen to these people, so they think, oh, you should be grateful. We are going to wire you up, but you live forever as a computer program or something. And I said, because they speak from wrong identification, all they know is matter. All they know is vulgar physical. Not that everything physical is vulgar, but what I'm saying, this from a basic point of view of consciousness, they cannot move beyond this point of consciousness. So if we can, do you want me to cover it immediately with Jung, or should I just cover Jung first a little bit?
Probably let's do Jung, because right now you're talking about the levels for the audience. Yeah. The gospel, Mary talks, or Jesus. Yeah. They talk about the seven archons that you have to encounter as you go up.
Can I correct it right away? Because I made the same mistake in the other goddess. That's why. Because I said, there are seven crimes, because everybody's writing about it. This is wrong, first of all. I will tell you why. Because the seven climes, or, you know, the climates or archons, actually you face them only when you're already at level four.
Really? I didn't know that.
So first we have 11, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And the last level, this is the last things you have to go let go of. So these are the seven demons that Mary Magdalene, for example, was.
Right, of course.
So, but people say, everybody, and you know, all best-selling books, you know, I made the same mistake. You know, it's like the seven things. But I think like people, you miss like it's, you miss the basics, you know. There's level 1, 2, 3, and in level 4, you deal with the seven archons.
Ah, so seven archons on level 4.
Yeah, and everybody says, oh, so it's a little bit like, you know, you just started to meditate and then, you know, you think you're enlightened, right? Because you
know something.
So this is a little bit like that. You have to, but it's actually dangerous because you didn't face your shadow, right? So you go through three levels. On level 4, you meet the seven archons or the seven deadly sins, you know, however you want to put it, or the seven additional climes. And it seems that everybody's missing it and everybody's giving courses on, you know, seven seals of Mary Magdalene and so on. And I said, just take a break a little bit, you know, like Mary Magdalene was already on did all the work to level 3. Now she's at level 4. And the thing he did for her, Jesus is for her, he helped her to face the last seven obstacles.
Right.
It's not like she came here, oh, here I am, I'm Mary, you know, like I would like to be purified. She's done all the work. So somehow, you know, because in our modern world, we are so rushed, including myself, as I said, I made the same mistake in my book. It is that we just went to like, oh, because it's like seven things. You know, but we forgot that there are actually four levels, and on the level 4, this is what happens on level 4. That's why levels are really important. So level 2 is craving, or actually it is, it's craving, which is basically desire also, right? Yeah. So there are certain things, and in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, it says, you know, you can drop it like a garment, but also it talks about the fact that you can either let go of a desire, or you can do this to get rid of a desire, or you can indulge in the desire, but then you go down. So basically, there is no judgment, but, you know, on each of the 3-4 levels, you make a choice up or down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is this level, right? And then there's a third level, which is the level of noose, which is the hook between soul and the spirit, capital S, spirit. And Jesus tells her, Mary, you're blessed because you can see me here. So first of all, she can see him, so she can see him in the liminal space, but also you're not afraid to see me there. You know, so she's not freaked out that, you know, it's not a ghost or something. And also where the noose is, there is a treasure. So basically, this is where the actual truth is being revealed. So that's the noose. And there's a fourth level of pneuma or pneuma in Greek, which is actually like cosmic consciousness or Christ consciousness. And this is when you arrived at this level, to stay in this level, because we all had like enlightening experiences, you have to purge the seven archons. Okay, so to be able to be there, or maybe you had a glimpse of it, and to stay there, like what's called in esoteric traditions, permanently established, you know, in this state, you have to purge your seven demons, seven deadly sins, or seven archons. But everybody says, oh, let's purge seven archons. But, you know, if you purge seven archons from level 1, which is basic, or level 2, no, it's a delusion. And this is when Jung comes. So maybe you go to Jung, okay?
Yeah, let's bring in Papa Jung.
Let's bring Papa Jung. And, you know, I have an interesting relationship with him. From, you know, adoring him to, like, thinking, oh, he's so naughty, you know? And so, and I'll tell you why, if you don't mind. So first of
all,
for the first time, he mentioned individuation in 1902, and it was in his PhD. But then he was heavily influenced by Freud, and the title of his PhD, can I read it, is On the Psychology and Pathology of the So-Called Occult Phenomena. Because, you know, so-called, so it means he was already interested, but he was, you know, good student of Freud, and, you know, Freud would have no time for anything like that. So it's so-called phenomena. And then in 1912, he returns to the process of individuation in his two essays on analytical psychology. But 1912 is a very important date in Carl Jung's life, because this is when he basically divorced Freud.
Right, right.
So, and then he starts to really work on the process of individuation and what it means. And unlike Freud, who was very clear, right, like this is the definition of ego, this is superego, and this is id, and, you know, he actually works publicly through his concept. So he publishes an essay and he works out through this essay what it means. But basically, so his definition of individuation becomes more and more spiritual as we move with time. By the end of the essay, it's completely about enlightenment, okay? But it starts, you know, like we have to negotiate with the ego and so on. Right. But basically, he says, we have to bring together all our parts, especially the parts that we disowned, mm-hmm. right? To not only to, I want to not only embrace them, but also to create the full individual. And he says, at the end, individuation is always spiritual. So it's not only kind of in Freudian terms, you know, negotiating between id and superego, you know, no. So ego is intact. And at the end of the essay, he says, it's actually once you're fully individualized, you're enlightened. That's why I think this corresponds to the fourth level of the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, which is the pneuma, when you actually exorcise the seven archons, as you said, or seven demons.
Right.
Wayfair's big sale is back. Get ready for Way Day. For 3 days only, October 5th through October 7th, save up to 80% off on everything home. With low prices on top furniture and decor, now's the time to invest in new seating or dining set. Up your holiday decorating game for way less. Refresh your cookware and baking supplies. Restock your linen closet. And maybe even treat yourself? Actually, definitely treat yourself. At up to 80% off, this is the sale to go all out. Oh, and did we mention everything ships free all Way Day long? Yeah, everything. Even a sectional. Plus, surprise flash deals launch every 24 hours on some of Wayfair's top products. So check back each day to score big on something you never saw coming. Who knows what amazing finds you'll bring home? Don't miss Wayfair's big sale. Way Day only lasts 3 days and won't be back soon. Save up to 80% off all things home now through October 7th, only at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
So when I was looking at this, I thought, okay, so Mary Magdalene, that's why I kind of briefly covered, right, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. She has these four levels there, and it's her teaching. So interestingly, the process of individuation has also four levels. Okay, that's why I went to the psychoanalyst, you know, to the Jungian analyst and said, do you know that? And I said, oh my goodness. Because they are interested, because, you know, they are analysts, but they opened obviously to spiritual somehow, because they wouldn't be Jungian, they would be Freudian or something.
And
else.
Myth, yeah, they love myth.
Yeah. Yeah, they love myth, but, you know, they just sometimes struggle with a Gnostic, you know, Jung, right? Because
yeah. Even though without Gnosticism, there wouldn't be any Jung.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, and if you want, I can tell you later anecdotes about Nag Hammadi and Jung and, you know, and so on. But
sure.
But let's stick to you know, the core of the topic. So for individuation has four levels, like the Gospel of Mary Magdalene has four levels. So the first level is... The fourth level is the mask or the persona. So persona, it comes from actually from Latin, you know, when actors were putting on a mask, you know, because, right, to play a part, you know, people were more naive then, right? So, you know, to put on a part. So basically it is like you as a good citizen. It is not, it's your social role. It's not true, but it's not who you fully are. So, for example, Miguel is a podcaster, right? Miguel is a father, Miguel is a husband. But that's not all, you know? When I, especially when I talk on controversial topics, I give my bio, I just throw all my degrees at them, you know? So then they have to think I'm legit, you know what I mean? Not because I'm full of myself, but, you know, it also helps them, you know? Oh, there is this, you know, PhD talking, right? So maybe it's not all bad. So... But this is not who you truly are. This is your persona. You're like a good citizen, you know, like in the Roman Empire, right? Like this is, So I'll give you another example. So persona also, like when we moved to Brisbane here in Australia from Melbourne, and I went to a new hairdresser and he says, so what do you do? And I thought, oh, I can create a different, you know, be truthful about myself, be more authentic. So I didn't say I'm academic. I said, oh, I'm a writer, you know, because I was writing my book. And he said, oh, but what do you really do?
So you're a waitress.
Yeah. So he says, I said, oh, I'm an academic. I coordinate 550 postgraduate students. Ah, now, you know, I regain his respect. So right. In a way, we need this mask, and we sometimes throw this mask at others because, you know, they don't respect us otherwise. If it's not who we, you know, all there is. Or, you know, if you're a guy and you're still dating or dating again, you know, like the girl that you shouldn't date who comes up at the party and she says, so what do you do? You know, she's asking you about your persona, right? Because she's actually not interested who you are, you know, whether you're compatible, right? It is like, what do you have, baby? You know, should I waste my time? You know, do you own or do you rent? Right. So so this is the persona, right? And this is what corresponds to what Mary Magdalene would say, you know, wrong identification, right? This is just, it's not that it's wrong, like, I have his degrees, you're a podcaster, right? But it's not all who you are. The whole depth is not shown there, right? And it's sometimes appropriate in social situations, you know, like, why would you tell everybody your full story? Yeah, nobody would like to talk to you because it would take so long, right? But this is what the problem is, Carl Jung says, if you completely identify with this. Right. Because if you completely identify with your persona, then what if it's taken away from you? For example, you think you're primarily a father or primarily a mother, and then like your children leave or your husband left you or your wife left you, and then you crash. And this is when midlife crisis happens and so on, because all you had was your social standing and you lost it, or you lost a job, right? In fact, I felt it when I got my PhD and I actually, you know, I couldn't get a job as academic. I already had a job previously, but I took time off to finish my PhD. But then I couldn't get a job as academic for a while. I had a major tantrum, you know, because I was so attached to this, you know, that, well, it made me feel like somebody.
Right.
You know what I mean? And but you, so this is when the second part comes, the shadow.
The shadow, right? Is number two.
The shadow is number two. So what is the definition of a shadow? So I'm just going to tell you. Okay, and when we talk about when we talk about Egypt, ancient Egypt, also what would be a persona in goddesses? So it would be Isis the matron.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because we know, and I'll explain later, that Isis has many shadows and many sides.
Right.
But Isis, one, I think it was Caesar that took Cleopatra, you know, to Rome. And she was like, you know, you remember Elizabeth Tyler on a big Sphinx entering, you know, Rome. And, you know, she was just too much for the decent Romans. So, you know, she became the matron. She became the later was changed into Black Madonna and so on. The mother, you know, somebody that is, you know, like senator's wife. You know, which is so not true about Isis. So this is Isis's Roman persona, okay? Because I would like to come back to this. So the second one is shadow. And shadow is, this is something that we are trying to disown within our psyche. So something that we don't accept about ourselves, yet it cannot be wished out of existence. These are Jung's words. It is there. You can hide it all you want, but it is there. You can pretend it's not there. You have nightmare, you know, like it will chase you. You know, you will sabotage yourself. And sometimes you may think like, okay, why am I not doing so well professionally? Or what's wrong with my relationships? Because you're not looking at your shadow. Shadow doesn't necessarily mean bad. It means like it is bad before you face it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when you remember when I was talking about this Isis Roman matron, which is a persona. So Isis had a sister, which I believe is her shadow, which is Nephthys. And she was apparently very naughty because she also slept with Seth. You know, like, I mean, who wants a sister like that, right? And she apparently helped Isis to resurrect her. Okay. But in this interpretation of a shadow, actually, Nephthys is Isis. And very often she's portrayed with her back like that. You know, like Isis, which is a shadow of the Isis, because Nephthys is the magician. Nephthys is the esoteric one that could not be accepted by the Romans. Right. Because they didn't get it. It was too mysterious and the magic is scary, you know, and all of these things, right? So Nephthys is a shadow, actually, of Isis, but it is the most interesting shadow of Isis. This is Isis, the high magician, the Isis who can actually rearrange the matrix of creation, because Isis, as I spoke in the other goddess, is actually into high magic, which means you don't exchange something for something, like in lower magic, but you can actually go into the core of matrix or creation and rearrange the pieces to improve things, okay? So Isis, for example, have to face Nephthys. You know, she has to integrate her, because the story of Nephthys as the naughty sister, you know, that sleeps with your husband, yeah, is basically added when she was already disowned from her shadow. Do you understand? When magic was taken away from Isis.
Of course.
Okay, so there had to be something to do with this magic. So, okay, there was a sister. Okay, and she was very naughty. She was magical, she was exciting, but, you know, she was bad. Because there is a sense of danger and unknowingness about it. And that's why Jung says that facing your shadow is a heroic act. And it is a heroic act. You know, like, we all are kind of hiding something from ourselves. Sometimes we don't know what, right? And to actually go through this kind of archaeological analysis, and, you know, facing it and accepting it and integrating it is like, it's heroic. It takes time. It's a true spiritual practice. And it's a heroic act. And it usually means that it completely destroys your persona to a degree, you know? But I can tell you from experience that when my persona was destroyed because I couldn't get a job for a while, it was a long time ago, after just as I finished my PhD, which was kind of ironic, right? I had to go into the shadows. I have to descend. I worked really hard on spiritual practice, and, you know, I was introduced to esoteric teachings, first of Kashmir Shaivism, which changed my life. And then that's why I can actually read the Gospel of Mary Magdalene now for two decades and so on. And now I'm academic again and I'm doing what I really was meant to do. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm not completely integrated, because I cannot really tell people, I wrote about sexuality and spirituality at my work, okay? And when I did, they didn't know what I was talking about. So it doesn't matter, but I am... you know, happy with myself. I don't have this like two sides to myself, right? I still give these talks, and I actually managed to integrate it somehow. So this is, and we all have it, and I'm still working on it because, as you see, like it's not fully integrated.
It's
my thing. But what I think, for example, some spiritual movements like New Age movements and so on, they just bypass the shadow. You know, they think that you just hold hands and sing and dance and everything will be good. You know, you have to face your shadow. So this is what Jung says.
Well said.
So the third one is in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. And also when we go back to the second level, Gospel of Mary Magdalene, the sin as such doesn't exist. So basically, there is nothing wrong with you. You just make wrong choices. Like, you can make a wrong choice, like not integrating your shadow, right?
Yeah, here's a quote. There is no such thing as sin.
That's right.
Rather, you yourselves are what produces sin when you act in accordance with the nature of adultery, which is called sin.
adultery. But you see, this is how it is being translated. When you not in accordance with your true nature, this is how Jean-Marie.
That's what I mean. Yes.
Because when the adultery and the whole like adulterous comes, things you know come back that you know, that it means you shouldn't sleep with someone else. No, you shouldn't sleep with a wrong identification of who you really are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's why, like I say, like I read several translations, and like this one for me is the best. So it's level two. Then we have level three, which is really good because it's nous. So nous is the hook between your soul and the higher wisdom, right? But this is where basically human being ends by himself or herself. So it means like a soul also. So this is the spiritual aspect of yourself, but according to this, it is the liminal space. And this is where Jesus tells to Mary Magdalene, you're blessed. A, you can see me there. Two, you're not scared. And this is where the truth of you actually lies, right? And that's why all other disciples say, what is she talking about? You know, like, we don't see it. Where is he? You know, can anybody see him? You know what I mean? And she, because they were on level one, which is, you know, identification with the matter. So they wanted Jesus resurrected, like, you know, as he was. Here he comes, you know. Jesus or Yeshua is here. He wears the same dress, you know, that's not dress, I'm sorry. He wears the same clothes, right, and so on. But no, he was in the liminal space. So according to Jung, it is the anima. So anima, as he works through his two essays, Jung has two meanings. First of all, it has its original meaning from Latin, which is a soul, right? So this is a spiritual aspect of humanity. And then as he works through his two essays on psychoanalysis, on analytical psychoanalysis, he's saying, of course, about anima and animus, which is the most now used. So anima is the feminine and animus is the masculine aspect of our personality. And both women and men have both. It's just that ratio can differ from individual to individual. And this is, if I can digress and say how naughty Jung was about it, right? Because in fact, I'd say that all spiritual traditions say you have to balance your feminine and masculine, right? So Jung is Gospel of Mary Magdalene, Jung, they are spot on. But Jung was quite naughty because although he was German, Swiss, he had a rather French attitude towards relationships. And he thought that ménage à trois, personally, suit him most, right? So he was married to Emma, but then he had a kind of a hierophant in his life, because like Isis or like Mary Magdalene, you know, was Stony Wolf, right? Mm-hmm. So there's this woman who was first in analysis with him, and then he says, be my anima, you know, you already, you know, like, so she was his anima, but also, and she, you know, she took him through this deep side of himself, right? But he says, my wife is like basically level one, right? Because she provides me with security and, you know, he really need grounding, you know, doing work. Mm-hmm. Work. And, but he needed, you know, like a hierophant, and she was his hierophant. Another woman, which I think it was Mary Louise, when Tony Wolf moved away, when he moved away a little bit from, moved towards alchemy, Tony Wolf didn't want to work with him anymore, Mary Louise. And then there was a third woman, Sabine, I think, Spielreich, who was an analyst, you know, as well. And she was, I like her because she had a little bit of a relationship with him, but then she said, look, I'm not nobody's anima, you know, I have my own career and so on. But what I mean, he kind of said, like, he extrapolated his anima, externalized his anima to other women in his life.
All right. Okay.
But they were very helpful to him in this way, like, you know, especially Tony Wolf or all of them. So it's quite interesting. But basically, we have to integrate the masculine and the feminine in our lives because this is where the treasure lies. So this is a process of integration. And this is in level four. So in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene is pneuma. And this is when you exorcise the last seven archons, and which in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene is very often negative thinking about yourself. So it says, who do you think you are? You know, where do you think you're going? Mostly because Nous is what is humanly possible for our development. And then pneuma, or individuation, is you need help from the above. It is the spirit. So in religious terms, it is, you know, like you get help through your spiritual practice, or, you know, maybe spontaneously or something. So this is where it's coming from. And that's why he says, Jung says, just a moment. Jung says that in level 4, not only you recognize your own innermost uniqueness, but also at the end you attain enlightenment.
Mm.
Okay, so this is
level 4. What's it called? Level, what did he call level 4? 3 is anima.
Yeah, and level 4 is the self. Oh, I'm sorry. So, you know, in Hinduism, they're very wise. They called, you know, small s, self, which is the ego, and yeah, and the capital S, which is, you know, the self as Atman, for example, right? So, which is the spirit, basically, the spirit. So Jung doesn't use capital and small s, and that's why there is sometimes confusion, because, you know, he's working through these concepts in his essays. So first he says, you know, this is now a full individual, but then, you know, then you're also enlightened, and it is because he uses self in different ways. And this is when analysts are often confused, because of, I think, this he didn't use the, you know, capital S, and he's talking about enlightenment, and he's talking about integration, and they can get integration. But they think, where does the enlightenment come from, right? Because they are not really that interested in this aspect of maybe they are, but, you know, they don't make the connection, because you have to really go for like more esoteric interests of Jung that, you know, we are doing, right, on the show and so on. So these are the four levels of Jung, which I think really nicely correspond to the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. And so, for example, I think I missed some examples here. So in level 2, in a shadow, then Isis accepts Nephthys, right? In level 3, in Nous, Isis merges with Nephthys, you know, like she accepts her magic. So basically, and this is where your treasure lies. I really love this in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. It is, or Joseph Campbell also intuitively repeated it, right? Like, where you're afraid to go, and kind of paraphrasing.
Yeah, where you stumble, there lies your treasure.
Treasure, that's right.
Nobody wants to look at the dragon, but that's where the treasure is. Right. You know, there's many iterations.
Treasure is in the darkest cave, right? Something like that. So this is what it is, you know, like, and it really encourages us to, well, accept ourselves. And also he says in our own very unique individuality, and this is who we are meant to be, rather than trying to project, you know, ourselves into somebody that we admire, or, you know, what we do as teenagers, right? Like, we have some idol and we dress up like the girl, or, you know, like the guy. But this is not. So it encourages us, you know, to develop its uniqueness. But that's why it's such a courageous act, not only because we have to face the shadow, things that we really cannot, don't like, accept about ourselves, and something maybe scary about us, right? So we have to be careful with this. That's why he himself needed Tony Wolf to take him, you know, into the underworld, because he needed her to bring him back. He was afraid he would get lost, you know, so he knows how serious it is.
Oh yeah, there's no guarantee you're coming out.
And there is no guarantee. What is this Greek myth about Orpheus?
Orpheus.
He looked back too soon, and that's it. He was lost, right?
He didn't come back with his anima.
No, he didn't come back. Yeah, and in fact, he drowned, you know, he in Hades, right? So so this is the story. But I think the beauty is also in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, when she says, I left the world with the aid of another world. A design was erased by the virtue of higher design. So basically, whatever, you know, we have to fix with ourselves, it, first of all, we have to put some work. But at the last moment, and it's also very Sufi and it's very mystical, help arrives. What is this saying? You know, make one step towards God and God will take a million steps towards you, something like that, which is actually Rumi. paraphrased. So, and this is like, you do this work, and you know, and the ineffable will meet you, you know. So, and I think that Jung had such wonderful intuitions, and that's the reason why there are more Freudian analysts than, you know, Jungian analysts, because he's not easy to understand. And you cannot be a Jungian analyst and not go really deep in through the journey yourself. When you can be a decent analyst, Freudian analyst, it's all, you know, like out for there, you know. There's vocabulary, there is this very simple structure of the psyche, you know, and that's why. But I think there is, although I'm not saying that the overlap is perfect, there is an overlap there between, you know, four levels of ascension, as I call it, you know, in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, of ascension of consciousness, and, you know, the four elements of individuation, which ends with the self, actually not only integrated, but having access to something bigger than the human self.
Wow. Well, I have to admit, what you just said, I think, is pure genius. I think there's, of course, the Jungian community would have to like it. I think you nailed it on the head. In fact, I'm almost jealous. My shadow wants to take away and steal your research. You like that movie Black Swan and take you away, and I'll take that persona. No, it's really brilliantly said. I mean, in fact, I hope you reach out to Megan Watterson. I bet she will be floored if she heard that too, because it's amazing. So I'm impressed. It's rare for me to be impressed. I am very impressed.
Oh, thank you. It really means a lot coming from you, you know. But it was, I hope I didn't confuse anyone, you know, who is watching, but your audience is much more sophisticated, gnostically speaking, you know, and esoterically speaking, spiritually speaking, because when I went to a psychoanalyst, they really liked it, but they said, oh, it was so difficult.
Go to gnosis.org, look at the four levels of Mary Magdalene, pull up your other tab for the four steps of Jung, and you'll see, Jesus and Mary Magdalene were just prefiguring Jung. Very simple.
That's right. But it's what's really I like about the Jungian analysts, that they are open to it. You know,
because
when I was giving a talk for them years ago, when I contacted you, like over a decade ago, I think probably now, on seven sermons to the dead, you know. So when I was doing it for them, they said, oh, thank goodness, because we're trying to read Heller, you know, and this particular book by Heller about seven sermons is just like, he's brilliant, he's totally brilliant, but it was like agony, it was written, you know, like, and he said, like, it was very difficult to get anything out of this unless you already have some background, right? Which obviously Heller has, but they don't, they're too busy to study Jung to, you know, to study other things. So,
no, makes sense. Well, I want to bring Vance in, but first let me do this little promo. He's actually in the chat room, and that is Anon Omos. I want to say yes, Astrognosis 3 is happening. Online tickets will be ready next week. We're still accepting sponsors. Tickets keep selling well, but I want to talk about one of our sponsors, and that is Anon Omos. Check it out. He will be there. He'll be doing a raffle too, and he's actually a cool guy to hang out with. But he is promoting his book, Revelations on Interstellar Highway. It was written by a self-recovered schizophrenic who goes by the pseudonym of Anon Omos. And yes, he's been on our show to talk about mind parasites and schizophrenia. He's been on Jerry Marzinski's podcast many times to discuss his story. So check it out. It's insanely powerful. But during his time as a schizophrenic, he underwent Gnostic and shamanistic experiences while enduring months of existential challenges. Oh, I can relate. At times he felt Christ-like, and other times being dragged through the darkest depths of hell. Talk about shadow. Hidden within its contents are mystery riddles and breadcrumbs towards gnosis, as it provides glimpses into the universe's magic. It is not for the faint-hearted and will assist with your soul's adventure and the hero's journey. Understanding there are multiple true paths to the Godhead, the genuine ones are paved with love, forgiveness, compassion, and gratitude. Revelations on Interstellar Highway 10 is a useful introductory manual for making the most of our visit here. It is a roadmap and travel guide for thinking in terms of eternity, navigating around the archons, and finding lodging among the Aeons. So check it out. Check out his book. I'll have a link in the show notes. And again, he will be at Astronosis with copies of the books to sign it and a very cool raffle. Check out Revelations on Interstellar Highway 10. So, Vince.
I just note something at Anon?
Sure.
Because I just saw some documentary by some scholar, psychoanalyst, who was saying that schizophrenics, modern schizophrenics, are often people who would be shamans. And because they have no outlet and have no background to explore their gifts, this is what it turns into, you know, but they were meant to be shamans, right? So it's quite interesting that he made this connection.
Yeah, I mean, doing this David Bowie book, half of his family was schizophrenic and had lobotomies, were thrown in hospitals for their life. He somehow was able to find something. He was always running one step ahead of the schizophrenia, and he was able to express it in music, art, and, you know, change. Yeah, you know, all the personas he had, I think there were way of either they were coping skills or he really was possessed, like shamans are often possessed, you know, the divine madness.
You embody the spirits, right? So
yeah, you're possessed by a figure and you just have to be that figure until that figure decides to leave you. But Plato saw it as a great honor. For our egos, it's horrible. We don't want to be possessed. How can you impress the guy at the party if you're possessed by Dionysus or something? How are you going to go to work? But what do you think, Vance? Hey, shining crazy diamonds. Please subscribe for the second part of this interview. It certainly helps grow this Red Pill cafeteria. What's more, beyond getting the second half, you get content earlier and don't have to worry about flapdoodle commercials here or on other public platforms. So please become a Red Circle sub, Patreon, or AB Prime member for the full consciousness expanding gnosis. At Patreon, I have tiers as low as $1 or $3 a month. And at Red Circle, it's a clean $4.99 a month to stream all full shows. All subs include a dedicated private stream that works on most apps. Don't forget the Gnostic Tarot, which is selling well and optimizing spiritual growth based on the feedback I've gotten, and the Virtual Alexandria Academy. I can't do it without you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being yourself, your true self, here in the desert of the real. Hello and goodbye, as always.